Hey everyone, it's Lynn again at Society 9. Thanks for joining our podcast. We're so excited for our guest today. Her name's Ivy Richardson. And for those of you who are joining us for the very first time, Society 9 is a modern femme sports brand providing boxing gear and sportswear to empower you and your fight. My name is Lynn, I'm the founder. We're so excited to have guests like Ivy, who not only are they multifaceted individuals and so accomplished in so many different areas, but they have important stories to tell. And I'm so excited to have Ivy on the show and to share her story and her community stories with us. So Ivy goes by she, her, and she's part of the Nuhok and Gaskamok tribes on her mom's side and Irish, Scottish, and English on her dad's side. She's the founder of Red Girl Rising, a wellness through movement initiative, and Team 700, BC's first competitive Indigenous youth boxing team. She also is the co-founder of Matriarch Resistance, which is a new initiative created in a direct response to the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit crisis. The program is rooted in sisterhood and empowering Indigenous women and femmes. Ivy's experience as a competitive boxer, student, and her working and lived experiences have guided her to become a community builder. She seeks to create a community that centers itself around accessible, safe, and empowering movement programs. So welcome, Ivy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So first off, I've been such a huge fangirl of you, and not only for who you are as a person, but everything that you represent and the legacy and the stories that you're trying to pass on through your experiences as a badass boxer. I'd love for you to share with us a little bit about your personal journey. What got you here today?
Sure. So I've been thinking about this question actually quite a bit, a lot lately. And I think for a long time, my personal story really revolved around trauma. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think it's a very common story, sexual abuse, physical, mental, emotional, kind of everything, you name it, you know. And recently, I'm trying to switch that narrative in my mind so that, you know, my life isn't revolving around this trauma. And I had to rethink that. What does that mean? What does that look like? And I'm realizing that my story, my journey, what got me here wasn't the trauma. It was the love. Mm-hmm. And the love of a lot of really strong women in my life, mostly my mom. And so it was through that love that she showed me that, you know, was that I was able to get here and move through those things. And so I'm really trying to reframe that my story is really about love. And then that's what carried me, not the trauma. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like that was something really important that I wanted to share. And it's very new. It's a new thought for me. So I'm still figuring that out. But yeah, very much the love and strength of the woman, of our woman. And that's something my mom tells me about a lot, about how we came from such strong women. And I wanted to share a story actually that,
please.
My grandma, she's passed now, but this is one of my favorite stories that she used to tell. So my great, great, great grandma, or my great, great grandpa, Captain Schooner, they were warring with another village, and they went to this village. And he took one of the chief's daughters as his, well, he took her on their canoe. He tied her hair to the canoe so she couldn't escape. And he brought her back to our village in Bellacoola, and he took her as his wife. And then years later, they had kids. And years later, her family came back to claim her, to bring her back home. And she chose to stay. And she chose to stay because of her love for her children. And so my mom always loves to share that story, and my grandma used to love to share that story. And it just really speaks on the strength of the woman. And so in our family, it's been the woman who's carried our children, carried our families. And so, you know, that goes back generations, that we've had that love for our next generations. And that's something that I carry really close to me. And so that is my story. My story is of that resilience and that strength and that love of our women, that our women have for our families.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing such a beautiful story. And it sounds like you had a really big breakthrough on that personal journey question. I feel like in some capacity, we always get asked those things, right? Like, who are you? What are you all about? Where's your family from? And I feel like at a certain point, would you say that, like, I know from, I can only speak from my experience because my family also too comes from trauma, different trauma, Vietnam War. But like, I think about that a lot too, like the narrative around that, that first generation, this pressure to have to live up to be X or to, you know, just expectations and pressure. So would you feel like this breakthrough, like what for you that does that breakthrough mean in terms of not just personal opportunity, and I don't even mean that on a professional level. I just mean personal opportunity. Like how has that felt to break free from what you describe as, you know, as trauma for you?
Yeah, I think it just frees me to be able to feel joy and be joyful and experience life and not just survive, but thrive, you know, and it really, yeah, I've really shifted from that place of survival to that place of thriving. And of course I still have my days mm-hmm. and I'm still, yeah, learning what this means. But for so long, I was just sitting in that trauma and I felt like I wasn't allowed to feel joy. I felt like I wasn't allowed to be loved or to love, you know? And so being able to, you know that that's part of it, but not focusing and centering my life around that trauma anymore mm-hmm. and knowing that there's so much more has really, yeah, just freed me to experience and be joyful.
So let's talk about that joy, because I know you are, I think obsessed is a mild word with boxing. it's your passion and it's your love and joy. Tell us more specifically about that journey, like how that path was laid out for you, or maybe it was out of the blue or curiosity piqued your interest. And then how, of course, it led to Team 700 and Red Girl Rising.
So I've always been interested in boxing. I grew up in Fort Hardy. There was no opportunity for boxing in Fort Hardy, but I remember watching boxing with my brothers. I also remember thinking, why are they so tired? It's only 2-3 minutes. Now I know.
I know, us couch coaches, right? Being like, yeah. 2-3 minutes? Yeah.
That's nothing. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and so I've always been interested. My mom loves to tell a story of when I was really little, I took her change from her change jar and went to a garage sale and came back with boxing gloves. I don't remember this, but...
That's so cute.
It's always been something that I've been interested in. So anyways, I didn't have the opportunity to try that in Port Hardy. We moved to Nanaimo so my mom could go back to school. And I had aspirations of playing university soccer because I played soccer growing up. And then I got injured and I wasn't doing much of anything. And I started weightlifting just to find some way to move my body. And then I was sitting, actually, this is super random, but I was sitting in a ballet shop just admiring the shoes and the beauty of ballet. I have this fascination with ballet.
Some people would say ballet and boxing kind of go hand in hand. So you're not totally, I feel like, okay, wait, I'm leading the witness. I'll let you finish. Because I feel like I'm like, maybe you're bringing up ballet as like an intersection into boxing. So continue. Don't let me interrupt.
All good. So I was sitting there and the lady came over, asked if I needed help with anything. And I kind of just told her, I'm just browsing, you know, I have this fascination with ballet, da, 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 da. She's like, you should do it. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, I'm a little bit too old. I was 23 at the time. She's like, you know what? Sometimes you have to get it in your system to get it out of your system. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, okay. So I'm like, ballet or boxing. And I decided to try boxing. And so I stepped in the boxing gym at the age of 23 for the first time. And I just fell in love with it. The coach after the first class was like, do you want to compete? And I was like, hell yeah, I don't want to do this just to train. Mm-hmm. I'm very competitive. And then on a personal level, like outside of that, again, I think the strength of the woman in my family, we've always been fighters. And my grandma said to me one time, you don't get to choose whether you want to be political or not, because being born into a country that's trying to kill you is a political act in itself. And so, you know, like we are just fighters. We just are. We are born and we are fighters. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it's always been in my spirit. It's always been part of my body to fight. Whether it's in the ring or outside of the ring, it's just something that I feel really called to be doing. And at that time when I tried boxing too, I was just leaving an abusive relationship, and I wanted to know what it meant to stand up and fight. I wanted to really feel that, and I really wanted to take my power back. So there's lots of things that led me here, but yeah, it was, you know, about taking my power back. It was about embracing that fighter, that fighting spirit that I've always had. And it was about getting it in my system, to get it out of my system. I've yet to get it out of my system. If anything, it's more, there's more of a fire than ever.
Yeah. It's like, you said it's like in you, you know, I describe it to someone the other day as like a primal instinct. Like
totally.
It like the fact that, you know, this is our seventh year in business, and sometimes I still get questions like, why would women want to box? And I'm like, we literally are responsible for creating life, or we have the capability, not responsibility, mm-hmm. but like we have the capability to bring life into this earth, quite literally. And that's why wouldn't we want to fight? We literally have to protect the very thing that we incubated. So it's like, I totally get what you're saying about that primal instinct. So how have you, obviously you're not the only one who feels that primal instinct. How has that grown into the communities that you're leading, managing, and passionate about now, like Team 700?
Yeah, so I think must have been 4 years ago now, I had my last fight. I was at Nationals. I was super burnt out. And after that, I was like, you know what, I'm going to take a couple months off and then I'm going to go back. And it's been 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. But my coach at the time was like, just start coaching just to keep your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And then Team 700 happened. So Team 700 is an Indigenous competitive boxing team that I created with the Nanaimo Youth Advisory Council, which was a council made up of Indigenous youth in or from government care. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a little bit hopping here, but I want to share the meaning behind the name.
Yeah, no, please.
So all of the youth on that council had that inner from government care experience, and boxing is such a big part of my life. I knew it was going to weave its way into the program. And so it did. And so we decided, let's start a team. You know, there's never been a team. We've never seen a team like this before. Let's create a team. And so I asked them to think about a name that had meaning, and we came to 700. And so 700 at that time was the number of youth who age out of care each year in BC. Mm-hmm. The number is closer to 1,000 now, but that name had meaning for us. It was a way for us to start a meaningful conversation and to stand for something, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's where the name came from. And that's where my journey has kind of led me. My fire now has been really put into coaching and developing the next generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm a little, all over the place, but I hope that answered that one.
Oh yeah. No, I just know that, Team 700 is equally your passion and your fire. And it's a natural extension of your boxing. So especially for those in our community who've never heard about it, I think it's really important for them to hear about communities like Team 700, where, you know, a sense of mission, duty, call to action, social impact can be, and naturally is intertwined with boxing. I feel like sometimes like people forget that like doing boxing, training, fitness, whatever is awesome, but there's so many life-changing and life-saving aspects of boxing, and joyful, right? I think there's also a lot of like anger, and you know, the pictures you see are always like, show me your fighter face, and it's like grr,
but gritty.
It's gritty. Yeah. And listen, boxing isn't necessarily a glamorous sport either, but on the other side of it, the beauty is actually in the joy that comes out of it. So like you said, you were competitive soccer, you vacillated between ballet or boxing, you went boxing. How would you say that your athletic and personal evolution then has occurred? Because obviously you went from team sports, and boxing is a team sport to a degree, but not like you have 11 people on a field kind of thing. But but now that with every year, you know, and as competitions change with age and whatever, for you, like, where do you see your evolution going? Like, do you plan on competing again? Do you see yourself as a mentor and coach, and that's really where you get your energy from? Or, you know, where do you see that?
I'm not ready to admit, like, fully that I might be done competing myself, but I might be done.
Denial is totally okay. That is totally okay.
I'm sitting in that denial space for sure.
Yeah.
I grew up playing soccer. There wasn't much opportunity in the town that I grew up in. So it was soccer, hockey, basically. And we played the same team every weekend. There wasn't
exciting.
Much chance,
yes,
for, like, you know, to elevate to those next levels. There wasn't much opportunity for that. Anyway, so we moved down here, and I really wanted to take that next step. Super competitive. I love sports. I love movement. And then I got injured, and then that kind of changed my path again. But I think it was necessary. It brought me to this path, and this is exactly where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I started weight training, and I was like, you know what, maybe I'll do some, like, competitions, like weightlifting competitions. Yeah. And then I was like, no, that doesn't really satisfy that competitiveness inside me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, after I had that conversation in the ballet shop, I'm like, you know what, I should just go try boxing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I loved it. I fell in love with it. And my journey with boxing was amazing, but challenging. And it gave me a lot, but it took a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's one of those sports, you know, you have to sacrifice, and you can't dip your toes into boxing. You're all in or not.
Yeah.
Really, you know, as a competitor. And so anyways, I did the competition circuit. I liked it. Upon reflection, you know, there was a lot of things I would probably do differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then I burnt out because I was overtraining and I wasn't looking after myself, and it wasn't sustainable the way I was going. And so that evolved into me coaching.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's next for me athletically, but right now I'm just really trying to find ways to move my body that brings me joy, mm-hmm. that makes me feel good, and less about aesthetics, less about, you know, a scorecard or whatever it may be. And it's just finding joy in movement. And it's something I've always loved to do. I was reflecting on this question
mm-hmm.
In elementary school. I used to run home after school because I just loved moving fast.
Uh-huh.
So it's just always been inside me to move. And yeah, my journey's been interesting, but really focused on mentoring and coaching, I think, now. And who knows, maybe I'll find some other space to put my competitive energy. But for now, it's really focused on, yeah, the next generation.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you bring up the whole, you know, joy and redefining what the power and movement is for you, because you're not the first person. I feel like everyone is going through this. A lot of people, I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people are going through this transitory state with those definitions, you know, mm-hmm. even me too. I think I mentioned in the last podcast episode that I'm undergoing my own movement journey too. I had a particular identity with one particular type of movement or modality, and then it, like, hard pivoted to, like, yoga for a while. And then with COVID, there was a whole other calibration. And I feel like, and that actually brings me to my next question, which is, like, I think with COVID, it certainly forced everyone. I don't think a single person, well, except for maybe the extremely privileged and unaware, but, but, you know, I feel like COVID did force a lot of people to reassess everything. So for your personal philosophy, I mean, you kind of touched on this, but this definition of movement for me, right? Not mm-hmm. for the pressures of expectations or anyone else, including the voices in your head. I include those as other people too. the voices in your head, the ones that are don't give it very much grace, as I like to say, the voices that don't give very much grace. But yeah, I was hoping, if you don't mind, like, would you be open to elaborating, like, what your movement practices have been as you've been exploring? And how does your intuition operate? So, like, it could be as quite literal as, when I stretch and it feels good, I only stretch and that's it, and I don't beat myself up to do more. Or is it, now I do 3 different activities a day because I like feeling lively. I don't know, but be curious to just hear how you're being creative, and how things feel for you.
I think I've just been a little bit everywhere with my movement these days, to be honest. And I would like to, work on one area more consistently, maybe moving forward. But, life's been really chaotic, and I've been trying to be a little more flexible with myself and my schedule and everything that's going on in the world, and just giving myself that grace. And so, whether it's going for a walk, which I've never done before this year. Or, just doing some stretching or boxing, lifting, lots of home body weight workouts since COVID, lots of solo workouts. So these days I'm a little bit everywhere, and I'm just, again, just finding that flexibility and ease of what fits in my day and what fits to where I'm feeling, or where my head's at, where my body's at, where my spirit, or, all of that. Where am I at, and what's going to make me feel good? What's going to support me in that day and not take away? And I think that's where I was going wrong before. I was doing so much. It was just taking instead of giving. It wasn't adding to my cup. And so I'm really trying to fill my cup. And so it's really knowing when to push and when to pull back a little bit. And that's kind of where I'm at with my movement these days. It's just, finding that flexibility and ease to be where I want to be and do what I need to do for myself on any given day.
Mm-hmm. That actually brings me to my next question, which is, when I was sharing your bio, your story, your high level story, Red Girl Rising is described as a wellness through movement initiative. So how do you feel? First off, would love to hear more about it, about the initiative. And also, how has your reclamation of joy through movement been, like, transmitted into that project, this initiative?
Well, I'll start by just sharing a little bit about Red Girl Rising, I guess, and kind of how that came to be. Mm-hmm. Well, there's probably a lot of things that brought me to this place, of course. But what I like to share is what I actually have on my website, and it was a conversation with my mom. Mm-hmm. And you might have heard this story already, but I went to my mom and I was like, "Mom, why didn't you raise us in a cultural way?" Because, we grew up urban, mm-hmm. we weren't on the res, and even like cultural days they have in school, we weren't attending those. And she never checked the First Nations box because there was, they created a lot of separation for those who were Indigenous, mm-hmm. In the schools. And so, she it was her way of protecting us, I think, And anyways, so I said that to her, and she just whipped around. She has this way. She's the most gentle, loving soul, but also just terrifying how much I respect her.
as moms are, mine too. Yeah. She's this quiet 4'10" petite woman, but you don't cross her. So
totally. And so anyways, she whips around and she's like, "Don't ever say I didn't raise you in a cultural way." And she went to elaborate on that. And, just the way you carry yourself, the values that I instilled in you, just how I taught you to carry yourself every day. That is culture. And that got me on a new journey of thinking, really just thinking about what is culture. and I would love to do a master's thesis on this topic one day. But I'm seeing there's like this iceberg, right? And there's the surface, what's on the surface, what you can see, and then what's below the surface. So I think there's a great balance to it all, and you need all of it. But she was right, you know, that those under the surface values is what she instilled in us. That's the culture. She gave us deep culture. Mm-hmm. She raised us in that deep culture. And I would love to, you know, get those other pieces on the surface pieces, you know. But the point is that, you know, she did raise us in a cultural way. And I do carry that with me every day. And so that got me to this place of thinking that every day is a ceremony. And so that's kind of how I try to live my life, is that every day is a ceremony. And I was thinking about it a lot with, you know, I did a lot of community work, working a lot with youth and families. And I was witnessing that when the youth and the families were in ceremony, they thrived, you know, and then they would come back home and then maybe get mixed into, you know, life that's here. And they weren't carrying themselves in that same good way that they were when they're in ceremony. And so, you know, it got me to this place of thinking, was how do we live every day like a ceremony? And we do that through those deep cultural teachings. Anyways, long-winded, but.
No, it's beautiful. Yeah.
So movement, I realized, was part of my ceremony. Mm-hmm. And movement was a vessel for me to honor my body and to practice those ceremonial teachings, you know. And it gave me the strength to carry myself in those ways with those values. And so that's part of what movement gives to me. And that's part of what I wanted to share through Red Girl Rising. So I wanted to be able to provide accessible movement that could, you know, be a vessel to share these teachings, of these deep cultural teachings, to be able to live every day like a ceremony, not just when we're, you know, at the big house, and we're not just when we're potlatching or going into sweats. It's every day. It's an everyday thing that we carry in ourselves. And so that's part of how it started. And then the other part, I think, was just, I was tired of not being invited to the table. You know, I was doing great work. I was working hard, you know, I was putting out good stuff. And I felt like, not that I need the recognition, but I wanted people to honor me, you know, and value me. And I felt like that wasn't coming. And so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to build my own table. And this table is going to be open for everybody. And, you know, and so that's part of the accessibility piece. And so at Red Girl Rising, I work with community serving organizations. We create movement programs together. I facilitate those. And I work with these organizations specifically so that we can break down those barriers, so that we can make movement accessible for their community, you know, whether it's rides or financial or child minding or whatever it may be. We work together to break down some of those barriers. So yeah, Red Girl Rising is about, you know, sharing movement to support that deep culture, to support living in a walking, yeah, every day in a good way, like we do in ceremony. It's about making movement accessible. And it's about, yeah, knowing that everybody has a seat at the table. Everybody has a gift. Everybody has a purpose and a place and a place. And, you know, this is a place of belonging.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to borrow that. And whenever I'm having a bad day, I'm absolutely remembering what you said, that every day is a ceremony. And that's one of the most beautiful things I've heard in a very, very long time. So thank you for sharing that. I think you said something that I like bookmarked in my head, and I wanted to make sure I didn't forget, which was, you were saying that I'm paraphrasing here, but you basically said that you were tired of not having a seat at the table, and also like not advocating for yourself, like not claiming your space, claiming your spot. So then you decided to just create your own table and to welcome everyone on your terms, on everyone's terms. Just like, if you have something to contribute, you're welcome here. On that subject of like equitability, you know, what do you wish, especially as representative of Ivy, yes, but also your greater legacy as part of the Indigenous and First Nations communities. You know, what do you wish the sport, fitness, and health and wellness communities to know, especially with Red Girl Rising and its beautiful mission, but then on a larger scale? You know, I can tell you, Ivy, have a greater point of view and a personal mission. So yeah, what do you, as a call to action, what do you want our communities to know, the greater, you know, sport and fitness and health and wellness communities?
I think the most important thing that I want the community to know, the wellness, fitness, mm-hmm. health industry community to know, is that we're here. Mm-hmm. We're here. We've always been here, and we're healthy and we're strong, and we've always been strong people. It's just who we are, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, there's so many negative stereotypes that exist and that are being thrown around. And, you know, that's on our community now to do that educating. You know, there's all the information is out there. And so it's really on individuals now to educate themselves. But to know, to not come from it always from this trauma lens, you know, mm-hmm. not to always come from this negative lens, but to come from, yeah, this joyful lens, this strength-based lens, that we are here, we are strong, this mm-hmm. is who we are, this is who we've always been. Mm-hmm.
It's very easy for Hollywood or pop culture or whatever to persist one story, like you said, and there's just simply not enough around happiness and uh-huh. peace. I mean, maybe not even happiness, because happiness arguably is also like a fleeting state, right? It ebbs and uh-huh. flows. You can't know happiness if you don't feel pain. But also, like, totally. We should be talking about the more pervasive, joyful, ceremonial feeling that you get with every stretch, or with every day you wake up and you see sunlight, or whatever. So I would love, I mean, I can only speak for myself here, but for those who are listening who don't identify as Indigenous or part of the First Nations, what are some very simple, I mean, simple, not so simple, but certainly simple in terms of tangible and actionable ways that we can be supportive and helpful and uplifting? And it can be as simple as like self-educating, being willing to self-educate, first of all, or sharing certain stories or reposting, amplifying art, Indigenous artists, or, you know, fitness instructor, whatever. But like, would you be willing to share some actionable ways that we can be supportive?
Sure. I think first and foremost, I would like to say what I did just say about education. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of information and misinformation out there right now. Mm-hmm. So really do your research and do it well. You know, don't just take what you read.
Right. A Facebook headline is not, yeah. it's not accurate information, people.
No.
Yeah. Newsflash.
In case you didn't know. Yeah. Now you know.
Or an Instagram illustration or meme is also not a credible yes. source. Yeah.
So do your research, do it well. The information is there. Stop asking Indigenous people for free labor. Mm-hmm. We are tired.
Yeah.
You know, the information is there. It exists. People are doing that work. Lots of people are doing that work to inform the communities. And it's mm-hmm. been done. And it's, you know, it's been done as far back as I can remember. There have been people advocating, mm-hmm. you know, and beyond what I can remember. Yeah. So first and foremost, educate yourself. You know, knowledge is power. Let's empower ourselves with real information, real knowledge. And then outside of that, I would say support Indigenous owned businesses, brands. You know, if you're buying something Indigenous, make sure you know that it's coming from someone who is actually Indigenous. Mm. You know, and that's that appreciation versus appropriation topic. And then, yeah, I don't know, support the people that are on the ground, you know, and there's lots of ways you can do that. Find those people. You can donate financially, or you could donate your time. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can give. and really, yeah, uplift those people on the ground. And I actually wanted to really shout out those people because I was that person.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I'm still that person, you know, and I think there are, you know, our frontline warriors, they are doing that work and they are so often neglected. And we live in this digital world where likes and followers mean everything. And, you know, it's really unfortunate at times. I think we need both, you know, we need everybody. I will mm-hmm. say that we need everybody. But not to just support those people, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that are doing that good work that need that support and that should be uplifted. And generally, those are the people who are forgotten or not. You mm-hmm. know, those are the people who aren't brought to the table and they should be. Right. So find those people and amplify and support those people because, you know, they're on the ground, they're giving their heart, their soul, everything into, you know, uplifting their community. So I think those are, yeah, a few things that I would say.
Well, and every neighborhood has them. They do. I hate yeah. the argument of like, well, I never see, you know, people of color around or indigenous community. I don't see them. It's like, that's a lie because our country is very, well, I can only speak for the US, but you know, it's like our communities are very mixed. Yes. Some yeah. cities might have more of a certain population than others, but it's like I sense the recurring theme here, Ivy, is labor. Stop expecting these communities to do your labor. You got totally. A phone, you got Google. If you had the time to Google to find yourself a new purse, you have time to do the work and yes, actually totally. Do your own independent research and looking at, I mean, I can speak for myself as someone who's, for instance, not Black, not Brown, but I wanted to support those communities. I did my own research to find out what communities in Portland, Oregon, where we're based, what communities are doing right now, whether it's mutual aid or even community walks, like going through neighborhoods that have been gentrified, really understanding how redlining or gerrymandering or how all these various policies and forces dismantled these communities. And like, one thing that I've always both admired as well as revere about indigenous communities is your power of storytelling. Like, mm-hmm. Like storytelling is activism. You know, I think about totally. What your mom instilled in you. And when you told that story when you were a kid and she got upset at you, cause you're like, how can you say that I didn't, you know, pass this down through you or whatever, you know, it's like, I definitely feel like storytelling is also this like weirdly unsung form of activism. So for those of you who are listening, that's also why your labor is important. Like it's important for you, especially if you don't identify with the community, but the fact that you're distilling the stories to the communities or the people you represent, they're so important. So mm-hmm. I just really want to thank you, Ivy, for being in our community and sharing your joy with us. I am definitely going to live every day like a ceremony after hearing.
Yes.
Yeah, I love, I'm literally going to put that on my like iPhone background of just like live every day as a ceremony. That's going to be like my daily reminder.
So love it.
Thank you for that gift. But yeah, thanks for joining and can't wait to see you guys all on the next episode. Take care. Thanks again, Ivy.
Thank you.